This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Democrats claim big wins from elections across the country this week. For example, high-profile races for governor in Virginia and New Jersey went blue. And as the dust settles from this week's results, many people anticipate politicians will soon ramp up campaigns for next year's midterms. So what does Tuesday's outcome tell us about the political future of North Carolina? Meanwhile, state senators are considering a plan for judicial redistricting. That proposal comes on the heels of other big changes to the state's judiciary. Joining me now to talk about this and more is Capital Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry. Jeff, welcome back.
Hello, Frank.
Let's talk about these national elections Tuesday and what implications there are. Democrats certainly thinking they've got better chances now in 2018 than they did before. Any implications for North Carolina?
I think what we can take away, what reasonable people can agree on, is that out of Tuesday, there is an anti-Trump message that is resonating with Democrats. Now, we don't know if it will resonate with Democrats in 50 states, but it certainly did in Virginia, in New Jersey, and in Georgia. And will it have effects in North Carolina? If there were elections today or tomorrow, absolutely. It would be very bad for the party in power. But they're 12 months away. A lot can change in that time. But we know this. We know that Democrats came out in higher numbers than expected. We know they did better than what the experts and the pundits thought they were going to do on Tuesday night. And barring some sort of shift or change or maybe, and this seems to be to me a long shot, a big piece of legislation passing in Congress that Republicans can coalesce around, Republicans are they're staring at, historically, a bad night next November. Some of that has to do with Trump, and some of that has to do with a new administration in the White House. The other party does well in the midterms.
Well, I think that does, it seems to me, would have implications for a state like North Carolina, mm-hmm. where you have certainly more Democrats registered sure. than Republicans. And so the question is, do they vote? And there were a lot of reasons why Democrats stayed home in 2016. Even then, the Republican governor in this state lost his seat. But if you look at some of, let's dig down into some of the smaller races, even mm-hmm. in Virginia, where, for instance, let's talk about one of the House of Delegates, a key member of the House of Delegates, a Republican who lost. Talk about that race and what implications it might have here.
This is a Virginia legislator who referred to himself, self-anointed, as the chief homophobe in Virginia. And this is someone who was carrying a bill, had proposed a bill similar to House Bill 2, the bathroom bill here in North Carolina, in the state of Virginia. And this is a longtime incumbent, a white man, who was unseated by a transgender woman. So one of my takeaways is that this is just a reminder, again, of this period of identity politics that we are in. It was also a rebuttal of this particular politician and his policies. And I think in North Carolina that, for example, Dan Bishop, who was a member of the House when House Bill 2 came up, he was the one who proposed that bill. He's now in the Senate. He's going to get a challenge. He's going to get an interesting challenge, potentially a challenge from the LGBT community. And I think as you look at some of the local election results from Tuesday night, you start to see different kinds of personalities. You start to see different kinds of characters within politics. And at this moment, it matters much less about what you are behind and supporting and much more about, you know, who you are and some of these personality details.
And the way it has energized that base, because mm-hmm. that candidate who won and unseated the Republican self-anointed chief homophobe in the Virginia House of Delegates had no interest in politics until
right.
that bathroom bill, until Donald Trump was elected. So this idea of energizing the base, and again, a lot of critics of the Democratic Party would say they had their thumb on the scales in that primary election, and instead of acknowledging the fact that they, what the Obama coalition had done, instead of acknowledging the progressives and the energy that Bernie Sanders was bringing to this campaign, they put their thumb on the scale. That's the criticism, and if that changes, who knows?
And I think one of the things to keep an eye on within the Republican Party in this state moving forward is how does the divide play out on the political trail? To be clear, there are districts in the North Carolina House and the North Carolina Senate where candidates can run as far to the right as they want and they're going to win. Perhaps they have to run far to the right or else they would risk a primary challenger. But there are other districts, as we think about suburban Wake and Mecklenburg and even a few in Forsyth and Guilford County, where you can't have these far-right ideological Trump-supporting Republicans I mean, in by my calculation, you can't have that. And what's in play here, again, reminder to the listeners, is the supermajority, and it's more in play in the North Carolina House than in the North Carolina Senate. Democrats need to pick up roughly four seats. But once you – the term the Democrats use is unlock the supermajority. If Democrats can make gains that are, you know, far less than what Democrats did in the House of Delegates in Virginia next year – that makes the policy discussion in this state more moderate for the next 2 years and gives Governor Cooper considerably more power.
You talked about the pressure to run on the right if you're a Republican, and I wonder what's going to happen. Any serious challenges to incumbent U.S. representatives who will be up for election in 2018, challenges from the right?
I think that as we look across the landscape of North Carolina, the state has 13 U.S. House seats. And the ones that are generally seen as the most vulnerable are the 9th and the 2nd. And I think the 2nd is an interesting one. You've got George Holding, who would be seeking a fourth term. And the Democrats have said they're going to put a lot of money in that National Democratic Party, and they're going to try to unseat him. There are already challengers lining up in the 2nd to try to unseat Holding. And we'll see this in a couple of other districts. So yes, I mean, that is going to be part of the dynamic, as we've seen before, but it seems to be more dramatic and more severe in terms of really running out there during the primary and having to come back to some extent for the general.
Well, let's talk about the General Assembly, because this week state senators talked about a judicial redistricting plan. Tell us about it.
Yeah. The changes to the judiciary have transpired over the last year or two. As a refresher, they reduced the size. There's an effort that will take several years to reduce the size of the Court of Appeals. They have tacked on the Republican, the Democratic monikers to candidates. North Carolina was the first state in almost a century to do that. So there are changes taking place to the judiciary, and they're coming in various nips and tucks, and there are folks on both sides of the aisle who say this needs to happen. It's been more than 60 years since a big judicial redistricting effort took place in the state. Obviously, the population has changed dramatically during that time. So what the senators, back to your question, are looking at is a proposal that came out of the House, which would redraw districts across the state, judicial districts. That's one big proposal that's gotten a lot of play. There's another proposal that came last month at the end of one of these, you know, we're back congregating briefly sessions at the General Assembly, that would propose a constitutional amendment to reduce all judicial terms to 2 years. There are some that are 8 now and others that are 4. Almost everybody to a T within the legal community says this is a terrible idea. So these are the things that are out in front. But what's really happening is behind closed doors, there's a conversation about merit-based selection. And if that's the end game, how do they get there? How do they do it? Merit-based selection is yet to be defined. I mean, there's a spectrum there. What exactly that looks like is unclear. But one of the things that lawmakers are presently looking at and talking about is putting forth a constitutional amendment on the ballot this spring. And what that constitutional ballot amendment would effectively do is remove voters from having a say in the judges. They would not decide. It would be a merit-based system. So it would come from the legislature, the governor would appoint, and then there would potentially be retention elections as to whether or not those judges would stay on the bench. So fundamentally changing the system.
So we're talking about judicial reform or changes in the election process. You're saying the planning is going on to scrap elections altogether and go to something else that has yet to be defined, a merit-based system.
Yes, a merit-based system.
Well, we'll keep our eyes on that. Hey, we've been talking about the national elections, but there's some pretty significant local elections in the state of North Carolina, to name two, the Charlotte and Fayetteville mayor's races.
There were. You know, Braxton Winston was somebody who emerged from Charlotte. Well, I wanted to get back to his identity.
Yeah.
He's a city council member. Right. So Jennifer Roberts lost in an earlier primary race in the Charlotte mayoral race. And we've got Vi Lyles, who's a new mayor of Charlotte. We have a new mayor of Durham. Nancy McFarland got another term in Raleigh. And then Nat Robertson, who was a Republican incumbent in Fayetteville, lost as well. So I think that there was a further tick to the left within these mayoral races across the state. Some of that has to do with urbanization in this country, right? And these blue pockets getting more densely blue. Some of it also has to do with Trump. Some of it also has to do with, you know, the anti-Trump feeling within these pockets right now. So some interesting races on Tuesday. Now, one other thing I wanted to note on this front is that I think there were some interesting characters that emerged from some of these local elections. One of them is Braxton Winston, who is a Black Lives Matter activist who was part of this iconic photo, shirt shirt off, black fist in the air in front of a line of police during the riots last year. You also in Greensboro, kind of on a different note, there's a woman named Michelle Kennedy who heads the Interactive Resource Center, which is a center for people living in homelessness. She jumped into the political fray, and she's now on the city council in Greensboro. So some fresh faces and certainly a different kind of progressive candidate we saw on Tuesday.
But perhaps the Democrats realizing that local elections matter. The Republicans figured that out a couple of decades ago while the Democrats were focusing at the national level. That could be it. And a more energized base, young progressives getting involved. And in Fayetteville, very interesting because the Republicans were very involved in trying to get their mayoral candidate reelected and failed.
The numbers aren't working anymore for Republicans in urban areas by and large. Republicans, there was I believe his name was B.J. Murphy, a pretty popular Republican mayor of Kinston, and he also lost. And we're just seeing more and more Democrats in these urban areas, and I think we're moving away from a time where you're going to see very many Republican leaders of cities in this state.
Jeff DeBerry, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Jeff is the Capitol Bureau Chief, and he has reporting at our links, stateofthings.org. Just had best-selling author of Black Hawk Down talks about a new book on the battle that changed the course of the Vietnam War. We'll talk about it on the State of Things. From North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, please stay with us.